The latter part of this hour, we're going to play a clip of past Coast to Coast guest, Dr. Paul Pearsall, who we just found out passed away. He died a year ago. We just found out about it just a few days ago. So we've pulled a little clip. That'll be toward the end of the show this hour. Next week, by the way, here are some of the guests lined up. Gordon Michael Scallion joins us to talk about his visions of dramatic earth changes. That's Monday. William Guggenheim joins us. He is an expert of researching and documenting over 3,000 firsthand accounts of communication with the dead. Dr. Tim Ball joins us on Wednesday's program as we talk about, well, climatology and biodiesel, kind of a science show. We're keeping Thursday night open right now in case anything happens or breaks. And then back to open lines on Friday. And then Saturday morning, I'm off to Washington, D.C. for the X Conference. And those of you who want to attend that, just go to the coasttocoastam.com website and get all the information. Okay, here we go. We'll go to our wild card line. First of all, you are on the air with us. Hello there.
Hello, George.
Hi.
Hi, this is Patrick. I'm calling from Portland.
Hey, Patrick, what's going on?
I wanted to talk to you about your whole being dealt the cards thing. Mine starts as a sad story. I'm only 18 right now, so I'm kind of a younger person.
Sure.
But when I was 10, my parents divorced. And so out of that situation, I basically became a recluse and just sat in my room and read a lot. But from that, I learned lots about science and math. And that's where my career is going to be headed in the future, probably. So that helps with that. And then also, I've had a lot of friends that have gone through problems like this, and mm-hmm. just being dealt those cards before with my parents getting divorced, I've been able to help tons of people through that, and I feel I'm a very happy and positive person now, and so...
Good for you, Patrick.
Yep. That's,
I'm sure in the beginning it was pretty tough, wasn't it?
Yep. The years I just pretty much spent in my room all by myself, but, I mean, out of it now, I have tons of great friends that are encouraging, and then I can help them out with what they need to.
And how good did you get at mathematics and the sciences?
I am a senior in high school right now, and I can do I can do all of calculus, and I can do all of Boolean algebra, like ones and zeros stuff. And then I study hyperspatial physics for fun.
I love it, for fun. Good for you.
Yep.
We're gonna expect you to do some great things for this planet one day.
I hope to do so.
You know what? Let me tell you. I bet you're 18 now. I will say by the time I'm 66, that's 8 years, 9 years from now, you'll be a guest on Coast to Coast.
I would love that if I could do that.
With some new revelation, something. I bet you will. We will remember this day, the two of us.
Okay. I will make sure. Thank you, sir.
All right, there he is. He will. He'll end up. He's going to write some book or come up with some incredible theory, and so be it. Let's go to our next wild card line. Hi there.
Hi, Georgie. This is Chrissy. I'm a mobile notary in Bellevue, Washington, a suburb of Seattle. How are you?
I've used that before. It's a great service.
I know. More people need to recommend it and hire me.
So what do you charge for spot-to-spot now? Like, I think... they charged me like $45 for some papers I needed.
And
my
rates start at $50 and go up to, I once got $600 for signing. The last minute, they had to drive all the way to Polsbo, which is a 3-hour drive. So.
Yeah.
But I have that's a good story, too. But this is even a better one. And I thought that, I don't know, maybe you'd like to hear a positive, upbeat story.
Give us an upbeat story.
Okay. Well, last summer, it starts out a little sad, but it gets better. Last summer, things were going pretty well. Now, since I own my own business, I work out of my home. It's hard to take time off. So I planned a 5-day vacation, meeting a girlfriend in Las Vegas. The first day I get there, my back starts hurting. Long story short, I end up in the hospital. I have a spinal abscess that's MRSA positive. MRSA, for people who don't know, is a superbug.
Oh, yes.
So I was laid up for nearly 3 months in Vegas by myself in isolation. Boo-hoo. Talk about feeling sorry for yourself. When I got back home, it was actually when I started listening to your show more than I had been. And it was actually something that one of your guests had said about purposeful prayer and praying for exactly, you know, what you need. and I was in a lot of debt. The money wasn't coming in, and I actually prayed for a specific sum of money that I needed to make everything all better. And I sort of force-gumped my way into finagling a deal with a really good friend of mine who had been trying to sell a two-digit website, which are pretty valuable. Kind of comes and goes, but he had been offered as high as like $60,000-$70,000, and he had a six-figure price in mind. And basically, he made a great deal with me. He said, "If you can get me this price, you can have everything over it." So I worked it, and I even exchanged a few emails back and forth with Uri Geller because there was a U in the website name.
Okay.
And yeah, he only offered me $500, though, so unfortunately, you know, true story.
That's Uri.
Bless his heart. But finally, I got some interest in it, put it on a website, and it took about a month, but I got a really nice bid. And with the commission that I got, he made his six figures, and I made six figures. So it was a good story. I got out of debt, and just being able to do something and, you know, significant like that, it also helped my depression, you know, coming back, feeling, you know, like, gosh, you know, I don't have any business coming in, I don't have any money coming in.
And when you say a two-digit website, that would be like AB.com or something like that?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And somebody... without giving me exactly who did, was it a company or an individual that
paid for
that?
You know, I'm not sure because I actually just looked it up last week, and it hasn't been developed yet. But I will say that 3 weeks prior to my website being, or our website is, me getting the commission, www.li.com sold for $500,000.
You got to be kidding me.
For somebody that I think was developing it for Long Island Tourism Bureau or something.
My God. I would guess there's not many two-digit websites left anymore.
667 were issued. So I think they call it the 667 Club. So I'm not sure if the person that bought it just wanted to join the club or if he's...
Here's an example. Like a company, let's say the XYZ company, and let's assume it's a well-known company.
Like BellevueNotary.com, for example, just as an example.
Okay. Now, let's assume that was a huge corporation, but when the internet started, somebody went and bought that website and a whole bunch of others. And let's say that company wanted its website, but it was taken. It was bought up. And like GM would or Ford or something. So they find out who owns it, right? I guess they can do that.
Right.
And then they say, look, I want to make you an offer for it. How long ago do you think these were going for and how much money? Let's say, what, 5 years ago, 10 years ago? How far back?
Well, the price has recently escalated. It kind of goes up and down. I've actually been watching this since the mid-90s because I've bought and sold a few myself, but I kind of missed it. But back in the early to mid-90s, people were buying them up for $30, $40 a piece. Well, now you can pick them up for $5 and $6. But there's a lot of people that still, you know, make quite a bit of money just on misspelled names. And these cases get litigated all the time because it's a kind of a sticky situation because you own, you know, Dottie and Joe's florist shop doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you own that name, you're trademarked that name. And even if it is trademarked, early when all this was being litigated, quite a few cases got overturned. But for things like GM, you know, it's kind of iffy. You're like United Airlines, UA, that's so iffy.
And I would guess that they probably ended up buying those from individuals because they probably didn't think, well, we better keep this for ourselves when the internet was starting to pop, right?
Right, and I've heard stories, too, about a number of companies buying websites and just putting them in the vault because they didn't want anybody else to have that website so they would post negative information about that company.
My, that is incredible. Okay, mm-hmm. Thanks. Hey, how much do you think the highest website went for ever?
Well, I know that in Las Vegas there was an auction back in February, and I was amazed at some of the prices. I think one sold for, I think it was porn.com, sold for 1.6, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Okay, thanks. It's amazing. It truly is. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Hi. My name is Rebecca, and I have a story about reincarnation for you. I think you might
okay.
like
Thanks, Rebecca. Go ahead.
When I was like 3.5, 4 years old, I would always go to my mom and talk to her about my family in Mexico and my mom, and that I missed her so much and I wanted to go see her. And my mom got so annoyed. She kept saying, "You don't have a family in Mexico. You're not Mexican. I'm your only mom." But I was so insistent about it. I had a brother. I had a horse. I lived on a farm. And one day she just got so fed up with me talking about this with her family. On a Sunday, she told me to go ahead and pack my bag. I was going to go see my family in Mexico. And she took me down to the local train station. They didn't run trains on Sunday, but had me go down there because she didn't think I'd go through with it. But I was so adamant about going to go see my mom in Mexico. And I got to the train platform. She thought I'd turn back, and I just looked at her, and I said, "Well, I'll come back and see you someday, but I need to go see my mom." And she broke down in tears, and she took me home. You're not allowed to leave, you know.
You're not going.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, that stayed with me for many years. I still remember a little bit of the house. But I thought that would be interesting.
Did you ever end up going down that way?
No, I never did. I can't remember any specific names or anything now. Now all I can remember is, like, the front of the house and, like, the dirt. I remember dirt around the house. I mean, that's the only thing that I can remember from there. But I talk all the time about my brother and my horse.
A little adobe home in Mexico.
Maybe. I don't know. It was really strange.
That's neat. That little girl had her bags packed. You're ready to go, huh?
Oh, yeah, I was ready to go. I wasn't scared of anything. So.
That's cute.
Hey, also, I know that answer to that question you asked.
No.
I can't answer it? Okay.
No. So we'll see you maybe next week. Maybe next week you'll be lucky enough to get it. I'm a fan of man. Lives on. We'll be up to 7 books, I believe, next week. 7. West of the Rockies, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. It's Neil in San Francisco.
Hey, Neil. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I'm a dog walker, and I just started this dog walking for myself. And I go every morning up to a part of San Francisco called Bernal Hill. And I've lived here over 30 years, and I had never even gone up to this hill. And what's really strange is the two dogs that I walk there, they keep digging and digging and digging. And I brought them up to the top of the hill. It looks like something like out of Area 51.
Huh.
And there's on the top, they don't talk about it much here. You can see the plateaus and the hills of San Francisco and how, you know, volatile we are to earthquakes.
But are these dogs digging in the same area?
Yeah, and it's real strange. I mean, I love the dogs, and the client they have knows that I love the dogs. But when I take them up there, they keep digging and digging and digging and digging, and it's like they're trying to find something. But when I went to the top of the hill, there's one commentator said that those are just radio satellites. But I don't know. I went around. I'm sure cameras were on me, and there's a fence that goes around with barbed wire, and it says, no trespassing. And
right.
There's like a fort there, and I'm kind of convinced that there's something that they're not telling us.
Well, you know, they have built a number of these places for containment areas in case things get out of hand.
Right.
And that could be one of them.
Yeah, because there's a huge, like, fort there that almost looks like it's made of steel. You can't get in there, and no one ever talks about it. But you know, I just told a story to the dogs that these were the aliens that were living under the hill there because they're digging, trying to find something.
They want something. And so you've carved out a living walking dogs.
Oh yeah, yeah. I love dogs. I love walking them. They're great.
Good for you. How many do you have to walk a day? Let's say to make some money.
Well, these. This client is just 2 days, and I have some other clients that when they go out of the country, I take care of their dogs.
What do you get paid to walk a dog?
Well, I don't take less than 15 an hour.
And how long do they want you to walk a dog for?
I do it mostly for me because it, you know, makes me feel encouraged. And
you enjoy it.
I do it for about 2 or 3 hours a day. I like doing it.
So you make a little money, and you're happy doing what you do.
And I'm making a canine architecture class.
Good. And it's your own business.
Right.
And how do you advertise? In the paper and stuff like that?
Sometimes on the net. Sometimes I just do it the old-fashioned way of making a banner and putting in coffee shops.
And what about people who, let's say, want to travel and go out of town? Do they
just take
the dog for the whole week, let's say?
Well, I took care of a little miniature poodle. She was great, and the couple had gone to London. When they came back, the little dog, her name was Valentina, and she was a little miniature poodle. You could put her in the palm of your hand, and she didn't want to go back to the owners. She had such a good time.
You relate well with animals, I take it.
Yes, I do. I want to be better near in.
Well, I'll do it.
Oh, I will.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Next up, let's go to our East of the Rockies line. Got a few minutes for you. Go ahead, please.
Hi, George. It's amazing to be talking to you here. My name's Ben. I'm from St. Louis.
Hey, Ben. How are you?
Pretty good. First thing I want to do is just offer a prayer and blessings to all those who are suffering on this planet because, you know, most of them are suffering in ways none of us could understand.
Well, that's very kind of you, Ben.
The theory I have on 2012 that I'm going to share with you is based on UFOs, extraterrestrial phenomenon. I happen to believe that 95% of the crafts we see are from Earth, whether it be government or and I've been watching that UFO shows on the History Channel.
Mm-hmm.
And
UFO Hunters.
Yes, and they've talked about the USOs, the submersibles. I have a feeling that a lot of those crafts that people are seeing are from the inner Earth. And maybe these aliens we're seeing are from the inner Earth, and it's their deception to make us believe they're from outer space.
You might be right. That's a theory that's been bantered around.
Okay, I didn't know if that had been around or not, but I think they've always been here. And possibly they told the Mayans when the Earth would end or when to end the calendar, based on what they knew or what they were going to do.
Very possible.
I have a theory that possibly in the 50s or 60s, they got together with the Illuminati and either made a bogus promise to them or a real promise that they could save them from whatever calamity happened because they knew all the tunnels of the Earth to where they could be safe in trade for their ability to be able to abduct people and to, you know, take from people whatever they need, maybe to reharvest, you know, who knows. But basically, and then they get to tell them also what to do, what to say in the media, because, you know, other than this show, the media is, I think, more corrupt than the government.
Cookie cutters, you know what?
Exactly. And I mean, every truck stop I go to, I'm a truck driver, they have CNN on the darn TV, and it just, I want to put earplugs in because it's...
Tell them to put Coast to Coast on every radio in a truck all across America. Of course, we got a lot of them anyway. I'll be back in a moment, a little tribute to Dr. Paul Pearsall, another Coast to Coast guest who has died. We'll be back. A couple more weeks here in St. Louis, the cave, before I head on back to Los Angeles. However, next weekend, I'll be at the X Conference in the Washington, D.C. area. If you live on the East Coast, you want to come on by, just go to the coasttocoastam.com website, get all the information you need on the X Conference. You're going to have some incredible speakers there. One of my favorites, Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell. He's been on my programs for years, at least 10, and I'm looking forward to meeting Edgar. And, you know, as you know, he tells some incredible stories about Uri Geller, and that's going to be fun. So if you live on the East Coast, definitely come by the X Conference. It's one of my first times doing a conference on the East Coast, so I'm looking forward to that as well. We found out last week that past Coast to Coast guest, Dr. Paul Pearsall, had died in 2007. Nobody called us, And we were calling him to get him back on the air because he was an expert in positive psychology, and I wanted to do a show on that. And he's gone. So we'll be back in a moment, and we'll play a clip of Dr. Paul Pearsall. And here he is now, the late Dr. Paul Pearsall. Paul, this theory that we're talking about, the factor, the Beethoven factor, is this something that psychologists now are beginning to embrace, or is this something that you need to still convince them that this works?
Well, it's about a half-and-half answer to that, George. For example, we'll be keynoting for the American Psychological Association when it comes over to Hawaii, so they're very eager to hear about this. And as you notice on the back of the book, the president-elect of the American Psychological Association wrote a blurb in support of this. The problem was historical. After World War II, psychologists could make a living pretty much because on curing illness. That was what the grants were for. That's what the research is for. That's what our pathogenic approach to health and health terrorism was about. So psychologists for NIH and so on would be able to get money for treatment for illness and for sickness. So to convince psychologists that that's only part of the picture, that we needed to also look at what makes us strong, began to be a little bit difficult. And then the problem became that some psychologists who did that, and some of the people, your listeners probably know them, Fritz Perls and Abraham Maslow, very good psychologists, but they were not necessarily researchers. So it became sort of a humanistic but a very feel-good psychology, mm-hmm. but not without the data to support it. So now psychologists are thinking, wait a minute, we have really missed it. We have missed a chance to look at what's best and bravest and strongest about us. For example, I went for my physical examination. I had, don't forget now, stage 4 lymphoma, know what it's like to die, and I go in terror each time I go for a physical exam that I'm going to get bad news. And I'll never forget at one of the exams, thank God not the most recent one, which was still good, but I got a call from the doctor saying, I'm afraid I've got bad news for you. Now, I don't know what you think, George.
I hate those calls.
Oh, I just got what Hawaiians call chicken skin, bumps. I thought, oh, my God, you got to come in and talk to me. So I go over, and I'm terrorized, and he sits down and plops the chart on the desk and looks me in the eye and says, I thought, sure, he's going to say your cancer's back. And he said, your cholesterol is 210. I thought, who the heck cares?
Yeah.
You health terrorist. I'm here to tell you tonight, George, that you can jog until you turn into iron. You can eat fiber till you turn into a brick, and you're not going to be any healthier if you don't live in what Hawaiians call, and this is a Hawaiian name for the Beethoven factor, pono, P-O-N-O. Pono means alignment, not balance. I'm telling you, this old myth about living in balance, I think it was Eric Fromm or one of those psychologists who said, God save me from balance. What a terribly boring life that would be. So you don't live in balance, but you have to live in alignment. And Hawaiians believe alignment with Keakua, that's a higher power, the aina, the land. You were asking about the volcano and the mana and energy from that volcano. With your ohana, your family, and your aumakua, your ancestors. Are you living your life right this moment, and are your listeners living their life and thinking inside right now as they think in a way that when their ancestors look inside there, they see something that they're proud of? That's a very different way of looking at life, and that's what health is about. So convincing psychologists and physicians to stop looking for what's wrong. Think of this. I asked one of my residents a few months ago to describe for me a healthy person. Her answer was this: someone on whom we've not done enough tests. So if you follow my point, it's pathogenic. We are not looking at what's right. How many of your listeners ever go to the doctor and the doctor asks, please list, first of all, 5 good things about your life and how you're feeling well?
They never ask you that.
They look for trouble. They're looking for trouble, either by their temperament or disposition or by training. They become very negative.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm asking your listeners, please, right now, ask themselves this question. Think of the person in your life now, before you answer, that knows you the best. Your mom, your dad, your wife, your husband, brother, sister, who knows you the best. Now, how would they answer this next question about you? Are you a true joy to live with every day? That is a very tough question. And I want your listeners to hear the difference in that question. Are you leading your life so you're a joy to live with? Not the old way, which is my life a joy? That was the Beethoven factor. These thrivers were a joy to be with. You could hear the energy in their voice, the humor in their voice. They could laugh at themselves. They could enjoy the moment. It was so noticeable that they were such a joy to be with, as opposed to, and I know you know them, George, people who walk in the room and you think, oh, no.
My energy zappers.
That's what I call them. Mana suckers. We call them.
Yeah, same thing. Mana is energy.
They just, and even on the phone, when I listen to your show, certain listeners, I'm not putting anybody down, but listeners will call in. You can hear the energy in their voice, can't you?
Yes.
Some of them are just eager for life. They may be weirder than heck, like I am and Beethoven was, but they have a joie de vivre. And I'll bet if you asked them, you could look back in their life, and they also have grown through adversity.
Same with some guests as well, Paul. I mean, there have been some days I wish I had a small cattle prod.
Oh, gee.
You know, to go, come on now, let's go.
Let's go, or maybe with a guy like me to shut up.
No, no, I like your energy. You can feel it. You absolutely can feel it.
And I just can't imagine. When I wake up in the morning, I can't imagine anybody taking that for granted. When I was in the hospital for months dying, I never knew if I'd wake up the next morning. And when I open my eyes and I think, I can see, I can breathe without a tube down my neck, that is unbelievable to me. And I think we're missing out on that. And that's why I wanted to write about thriving. I wanted to do a book that was not about how to solve this problem, how to cure a dysfunction, how to do a diet. I swear, George, if I wanted to have a mega seller, I would title the book, How to Go on a Diet, Lose Weight, Have Better Sex, and Look Good. That's what we sell in this country. But we're not selling what really matters to us, which is your life a joy for others to be around? Are you that valuable to this world? That shows that you're a healed person. That shows you have the Beethoven factor.
Now, is that a guarantee that you will get better in case you're sick? Is it a guarantee that others around you will feel this energy?
It is, but listen to the caveat there. We must understand that healing is not getting better. Healing is becoming whole again. People die who heal. People live a long time who never heal. Healing comes from the old Latin word halen, means to make whole. So there are no guarantees in this life. The best story, and I know your listeners probably have read it in the book, was a little girl next to me when I was dying of cancer named Patsy. And this poor kid had two bone marrow transplants, not just one like me. She made me look like the world's greatest sissy. This little kid was so great in how she approached life that she would crouch down on that IV stand, you know, that holds up the stuff, and ride it past a nurse's station crouched, and you couldn't see her, so the stand would float by like it was going by ghosts. This little kid was funny. She was strong. Her parents loved her, but she didn't make it. Does that mean she really failed? This little kid healed more people. She was the one that taught me that the term self-healing is an oxymoron. No one heals themselves. Healing, living, joy, the Beethoven factor are group processes. And the old psychology was a self-potential, personal power. I know you know, George, the tapes that sell on that kind of concept, the idea that I can do it. I am me. I am the powerful one. What I learned from my death. Now, how many of you guests can say that?
Please? Yeah, not a lot. How many want to?
I don't want to. I'm not proud of it either. But what I learned from my death is that you can't do this alone. And we have to get by this self-help approach. I thought it was funny the other day in the bookstore. I was in there. When I go to a bookstore, it's like a drug buy. I want to buy so many books.
Sure.
And I'm standing there, and a lady comes in and asks the clerk, where is the self-help section? Now, I meant it as a joke, and I told her, why don't you begin now? Find it yourself.
I meant it as a joke.
I got what Hawaiians call stink eye.
Yeah.
And you look in that self-help section, and look, they're based on negativity. They're based on repairing something that's naturally wrong with you. They're always based on very little research. If you look in the back, where's the data? I'm proud of the Beethoven factor that you got on your desk there probably.
Sure is.
But in the back, it's researched. It's documented. I am not the guru just because I made it through cancer. I have my flaws, and many of them. But I can tell you there's a new science out there that's finally giving us some good research-based answers on what it really takes to lead the good life, not just a selfish life, but good one.
That's what's exciting, because you believe the data backs up how you feel, what you think, and what you put in the book.
I think you have to ask everybody, and you do, on your show. I think your listeners should ask me. I think that readers should ask of their writers and their authors, how do you know? In Hawaiian, it's ike aku ike mai. Where is your support? It is not enough that you have a talk show. It is not enough that you've written 10,000 bestsellers. It's not enough that you're on coast to coast. You have to account, and that's what we've not done in psychology. If you watch television, listen to radio, psychologists will give you the answers to everything. I watched one, and you know who he is, talk show that's very popular, and this person in 1 week solved dieting problems, sex problems, parenting problems, aggression problems, lack of assertiveness, and also how to shop.
He's like a human wonder pill or something.
It's right? Amazing. I don't know where he went to school, but I didn't learn that stuff. I learned how to ask questions and research, not have the answers. And that's what the Beethoven factor was about. I wanted to not just give them cliches. I wanted to say, is thriving real, or is it just sort of a nice romantic thing to say on radio?
Well, and I was going to say that. How many people take that advice from that person and merely walk away thinking they feel good about it?
Well, they do, and it failed. I mean, what's the biggest selling books in the world are diet books.
Diet books.
And whoever succeeds on them. Your listeners can take this little test right now. Think of a person that you are blood related to who lived to over age 80 in pretty good health. Now, most of us can think of somebody. Can you, George?
Well, I think of my dad. My dad's 80. Never in his life did he go on a diet.
There you go.
Now, he was never really obese by any means. I mean, right. He was my dad, you know. But he never really did anything unusual. Worked hard, took care of his family.
Probably had some stress.
Had some stress, and probably one of the most wonderful people I've had the pleasure of knowing.
Well, there you go. And I ask that question when I lecture to audiences, 1,000 people in front of me. I'll say, stand up if you have somebody like you mentioned, like your dad. They'll stand up. And I'll say, did the person who lived this long and healthy, did they eat on a careful diet? Did they exercise aerobically every day religiously?
No, we never exercised.
And everybody knows somebody like that. Listen, medicine can only explain 46% of the variants. That's a technical way of saying 46% of why we get sick. We don't know why. I never smoked. I never drank. I think I'm a pretty nice person. I got cancer. No one in my family had cancer. I don't know why I got cancer. Medicine doesn't really know. That's why we use the old joke, if you have a cold, go to a doctor. It'll go away in 2 weeks. If not, it'll be gone in 14 days.
Well, I have a theory about cancer myself, Paul, and that merely is all of us on this planet, we are walking around with mutated cancer cells, but something happens to our immune function for one moment, a split second perhaps, and it takes over. That ability we have to beat it, and you now have, but for some reason, you lost it for that moment, and it took over.
And the data supports you. That is not myth. The immune system is particularly sensitive to our emotions, and it's subtle. It's not, you can't fool it, George. You can't say, oh, I have a positive attitude. It's what's in your heart right now. So when your listeners are hearing our voice, you can't fake it. If there's a cynical, hostile, impatient, the things we'll talk about tonight, those kind of thoughts, your immune system responds. You're right medically. For example, we're forming millions of new cells all the time. Some are made wrong, just by like any assembly line.
Absolutely.
But you have T cells. You have an immune system that will go in search of those cells, as you just said, kill them off for you, and maintain it. Now, why is it that sometimes that immune system fails to operate that way? Maybe it's because it was overwhelmed. I don't want to just blame the person. Maybe the toxicity in your system was so strong the immune system couldn't handle it. But on the other hand, I had cancer of the immune system. That's what lymphoma is. The very system that was supposed to protect me was attacked.
It broke down. Yeah, you were tremendously under attack.
I had no defense system to fight. It's like an army that's killing itself. So that, why does that happen? Most of us, in science, really have to be honest and say we don't know. But cancer is a cell disease. they overgrow and the immune system is unable to cope with it. And one of the best things you can do is not only diet and not only exercise and not only some of the things you, the newer things that you're hearing about in terms of chemicals and various concoctions. I am also suggesting that we need to look at the status of our immune system.
Dr. Paul Pearsall, dead at the age of 65 of a cerebral hemorrhage.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden. And I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid. But as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century.
For Kara Scoburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.